You're listening to Date with Kate, where I sit down with creatives, trailblazers, healers, and rule breakers to see what makes them tick, to extract their wisdom, and to share with you their stories. And it's my intention that after listening to this conversation, you feel more expanded, excited, and inspired to go out and live your best life, whatever that means for you. So sit back and relax as we dive in deep. And hey, thanks for listening. I am so happy you're here. Hi guys, and welcome to this episode of Date with Kate. I am joined by my beautiful sister and awesome, awesome legend, Miss Emily Cusa. Thanks for coming on a date with me.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I'm really excited.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So Em is an amazing educator in so many different things. Like, I find it so hard to put what you do into a box.
Me too.
I know, because you, I don't know, Em, every time I sit with you, I learn, I feel like you're just such an incredible teacher. But do you want to share a little bit about your work and what you're up to at the moment?
Yeah, sure. So I've been living in Bali for 10 years, yeah. And I've been part of a studio called The Yoga Barn. So I've been running month-long programs of meditation and hatha yoga there, and teaching regular public classes, regular women's circles too, and workshops on various like taboo-busting concepts like death, impermanence, sex, and
just
the small stuff. So kind of the full spectrum of just really diving into subject matter that I feel is overlooked, not only in the spiritual world but just in general life. Those are the things that really fascinate me, and I'm really passionate about getting people together to discuss those things, to meditate those things, to unravel what is it that keeps us from talking about the things that are actually really prevalent in our day-to-day lives.
Yeah. The stuff that shakes us. I love that. And I love like being in your classes and in your women's circles and just knowing you as a friend and knowing how you show up to that work. It's so inspiring because you're like the living, breathing book of it as well. Mm-hmm. And I know that whatever is going on for you in your life, you're out there teaching and holding space from this real place of honest vulnerability, I would say. And I just so admire that in you.
Thank you. My goal for this year of 2018 was to live authentically and gloriously flawed.
I love it. Authentically and gloriously flawed. I love it. So we're sitting in my retreat center in Bali. You can probably hear the river outside and there'll be random chickens and roosters, all the Bali sounds. But I want to dive in deep to a topic that is so close to my heart, and I know that you're just the girl to talk to this about it and speak to us about self-care. Mm-hmm. Because I think in everything that you teach, whether it's yoga or women's circles or relationship or those physical embodiment practices and all of the stuff that you have personally explored and have direct experience to, I feel like there's this silver thread of self-care that goes through every single one of those things. And I'm really bad at it. You know, it's taken me years and I still wouldn't say I have really good quality self-care. But what do you think is the, like, can you kind of identify what self-care is to you and why it's so important for us right now?
Yes, and I can also say it's been so challenging for me as well. And of course, that's why I'm kind of holding space for understanding self-care and self-care programs, because it's been, my God, it's been such a journey. I'm trying to figure it out as a woman. And I feel like a transformation of our idea of what self-care is really needed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, women think of self-care, you know, in our fast-paced modern world as, well, I'll go out with a girlfriend to get a pedicure and a manicure, or I'll go get a massage, mm-hmm. or I'll just take a little time out. And yeah, all of those things are self-care, but they're in a way, they're very loose, and they're not lasting.
Yeah, it's maintenance.
That's maintenance. And like, we go and do it, and at the end of the day, we might even forget we did those things for mm-hmm. ourselves. It's mm-hmm. not very lasting. It doesn't take us to the deepest layers of our being as like, oh, that is myself, mm-hmm. and I am caring for my deepest, deepest self.
Yeah.
I think one of the most important things about self-care is to just really start asking that big spiritual question of like, what is the self?
Mm.
What is the self? I mean, that's a huge undertaking already to understand, like, who are we really? Where is my psyche?
Mm-hmm.
What is my nervous system? What has it been telling me?
Mm.
Yeah, where are my emotions? Where are they stemming from? And how can I really get honest about all of those things and how I'm feeling and create a lifestyle that is caring towards the self, the emotions, the psyche, the physiology?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Was there like a personal experience or maybe a pivotal moment that you can pinpoint that made that inquiry deepen within you? Like, what happened for you to really journey down this road of getting to know that self and self-care and rephrasing it, I guess, for yourself? Like, what, take me back to that moment. I'm so curious.
Well, there was a few. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll speak to two different moments that really pop out.
Yeah.
One was, I was young, I was in my late teens, I had a really chaotic upbringing, there was a lot of drama in my family, and I felt like my whole life and my mind was super chaotic.
Yeah.
There was no order to my life. And I found, you know, yoga and spiritual texts, and I started to go down that route and felt like, wow, the getting into my body, my breath, yoga poses, a quiet space to practice, that really put some order to my
mm-hmm.
chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And that became a really, really solid way to meet myself on the regular
mm.
as self-care. So I stayed with that for many years.
Wow, that's so young.
You're super young.
To go out for that search at that age.
Yeah,
you know?
I left home. I lived in my Nissan Sentra in LA after growing up in Tucson, Arizona. And, you know, it was just like really questioning if I was an alien placed on this planet into the family
wow.
that I was placed into. And it's like, I felt so nuts. I felt so kind of disjointed and out of place, and you know, thank God I found something that worked. Like, the
yeah.
yoga really worked to give me like a safe place to go, and yeah, like a yoga studio, really
yeah.
beautiful yoga studios to just go and be quiet,
mm-hmm.
to hear how loud my mind was. I didn't really realize, and so that gave me the order that I needed,
mm.
and also a chance to just be really self-aware.
Mm.
But then what happened after many years of that, and then also moving to Asia, and I started to look more into the feminine aspects of, you know, of spirituality, and I started to realize, after so much of exploring yoga and Asian studies, and after reading what I thought was like every single book on the body and somatics, and, you know, going into all of these different fields, I started to recognize that I couldn't find anything about my body as a woman. I couldn't find anything about like my menstrual cycle. I couldn't find anything about the uterus. I couldn't find anything about my breasts. Like, it was as if my body as a woman didn't exist in this field that I had poured my heart and soul into.
Wow.
It was making me hot with anger. And I didn't know who to talk to about it.
So how old are you around this time? Like, how much time was there? That girl that got to LA and found a little bit of peace in the chaos on the yoga mat. And then
she's about 12 years.
Okay, so we're 12 years in.
And
yeah. And you're like, where's the feminine?
And I'm like, where is the honoring of my body parts that I'm actually at this point in my life? I need some answers to some big questions about how this functions, mm-hmm. and some things that were coming up for me around movement, around relating, around ideas I had about God and spirituality, but it wasn't being addressed from the voice of a woman.
Wow.
And it, like I said, it was as if these body parts just didn't exist. And so I think my surprise, my shock, my dismay, my anger, all these emotions churning around that revelation, like, whoa, what's going on here? Took me on a really deep research project into the feminine.
Yeah.
A personal research project, but then also just like, I needed to know everything and talk to everyone about this and start to gather data about what is it to really take care of my body as a woman? Mm. What is self-care as a woman? Because I started to realize we don't have much access to that kind of information for women's spirituality, sexuality, and psychology. It's like,
yeah, especially written in women's voices.
Written in women's voices.
Yeah, because it's obviously written. There's lots of stuff written in a man's voice from them, you know, observing women, which is different. It's like a different stream of information.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned there was like this heat and this rage and this anger inside of you. Where was that coming from? Was that like triggered from in your personal experience, do you think? Or was it more about the collective experience of what wasn't being shared? What pissed you off about it?
The thing that I remember the most is, so there's a field of study called somatics, which just basically means the felt sense of something.
Yes.
And I had gone to some of the top teachers and leaders in this field, courses, asked questions, read books, and I was like, if I'm meant to have the felt sense of all of these parts of my body in this field of somatics and in yoga, then why isn't anyone talking about what's considered to be the most important body part of a woman, like the uterus, the ovaries? What about the felt sense of these areas where all of humanity grows and is born into the world? And I that just was really starting to bother me and to make me, make me upset. I wanted to feel these parts of myself. And I feel like I had been taught not to, in a way.
Wow.
And that sparked some fire.
Yeah, I bet. And so when you're going through, because I've studied somatics as well, and I just find it fascinating, and I still do. But when you were going through your retreats and your teachings and sitting with teachers and everything, did they just kind of brush over the
womb? There was no addressing any of it.
So, wow.
It was just like,
now I'm getting angry. Yeah,
there was this non-existent, you know, we're talking about like,
can you give me
a sense of the example? Bones,
like, where were you? Where had you traveled to learn, for one example?
Here in Bali, we have so many amazing teachers coming here.
Yes.
So there were courses happening here.
Yeah.
And I've sent month-long studies, 6-month studies, and this just kept happening where I was like, the less it was spoken about, it wasn't being spoken about at all, the louder it got in my head of like an alarm bell of like, whoa, what is going on here? I don't know how to describe it aside from just, you know, the universe sending me the most direct like message of, hey, something's not right. Look.
Yeah. Wow.
Look deeper. It was so loud in me.
So you found the kind of peace and the chaos on the yoga mat.
Yeah.
And then you found sensation within the body through this somatic training and everything, and then now you're at the womb, you're angry, you're pissed off, you still haven't like really felt what it means to be What happens next?
Well, I traveled to Boston to be with a friend whose children were, they were born, she had twins, and they were born with an ailment. And so I was visiting her and supporting her and her daughters. And I remember sitting in her backyard waiting for her and the kids to get home one day. And I sat down and did a little meditation in the grass in the backyard. And suddenly everything disappeared around me and I dropped down into my womb space.
Wow.
And I was actually there. And I don't know if I'd ever actually felt that before. Or even, I don't know, meditated on that before. And what I saw when I was in that space, and I knew I was there, there was no doubt about it,
mm-hmm.
I saw this really distorted version of myself
mm-hmm.
as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a vision of myself chained up and crazy and abused and scared and neurotic and in a dark prison-like cell, and it freaked me out.
I can imagine.
I reckon, you know, I it was like I was there seeing myself, and the self, maybe the self that resembles that space of me that had, yeah, been abused and ignored, and, you know, the collective psyche around the uterus in the entire world, around the womb space, the trauma there, of course, the beauty and all of these things. But I really tuned into the part of me, in the most important part of my body, that had been completely neglected.
Wow.
And what I did in that meditation, without even, I wasn't following any technique or anything like that, it was just suddenly happening. So I felt myself holding myself and trying to calm respectfully this version of me down,
mm-hmm.
holding myself. And it was a profound experience.
Wow.
Like, I need to make some lifestyle changes and do something about this. And I knew this wasn't just me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I had a sense that this is, I was tuning into a really bigger story than myself.
Yeah.
I just had been very unaware.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know there was a problem.
Yeah, exactly. I know. And the thing that I resonate, because I've had a very similar experience,
mm-hmm.
but you're on this path of kind of self-discovery and spirituality. You're already teaching, you're doing all of these things. And then all of a sudden you drop down into this other layer and you're like, holy shit, there is some more stuff happening here. But me hearing your story, it's like the amount of, you know, opening and expanding you had to do to even find that woman that was chained up and locked in that dark room.
Mm-hmm.
It's extraordinary how hidden that part of ourselves is within us, you know? And I want to honor that work that you did, because most people, I would say, and this is very true for me, we get into resistance about it because sometimes there's so much pain and we bury that pain for a reason, you know. We don't just lock it in and just, you know, get on with things.
Yeah.
It's buried for a reason. And so the fact that she came that day when you're in Boston and having that meditation, you were so ready to meet her, and what you held her, and what were some of those lifestyle changes that were calling you?
That stemmed from there. What were some of the lifestyle changes? Well, I realized that what I was doing for self-care wasn't addressing these parts of my body. And I just got honest with I felt at that moment, and I was starting to feel around that time, that I was starting over from scratch. And as a professional of something and someone passionate and dedicated to their work, I see the face.
Yeah,
Kate's making this face.
I
know,
it hurts.
I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like feeling that I had to start everything from scratch and really reassemble what I know about the body, the mind, and health and self-care.
I know.
I felt like it was at the beginning. And I still, to this day, feel like I'm piecing things together and it will be a lifelong process.
Yeah.
But some of the things I changed very quickly was what I was spending my time doing. Mm-hmm. I stopped expecting myself to have this, like, time frame of I have to fit in some sort of movement, asana, meditation, structure, program into my lifestyle. I had that. So I know a lot of people have a hard time with that discipline. I had created that discipline. Mm-hmm. So for me, I had this awareness that, wow, that's really, like, a lot of what I've been doing is a very patriarchal, masculine framework of what is self-care. So mm-hmm. that suddenly, as I was dropped into my womb space, that became incredibly clear
mm-hmm.
that I needed to soften the edges around what I consider to be healthy and caring towards myself, because the structure and discipline was actually making me a little agitated over the years, and like my boundaries had gotten a little too fierce. So I started to loosen up around the expectations that I was placing on myself.
I love that. And, you know, I see this, and I've had this experience as well, where you think because you're doing yoga, you're doing something really healthy and you're connecting. But when everything around it is not serving the point of being free and open and embodied and, you know, I've got to get on that yoga mat at 9 o'clock. Otherwise, I'm a bad person and my whole world's going to fall. Like, it's so common to see that around what should be a practice that connects you into yourself and to God. And I just totally hear what you're saying around that, softening the edges and getting back to the real essence of why you get on the mat to start with.
Yes. And I'd say the second thing that started to happen was, I'm not even sure if I can put this into the best words right now, but there was something around needing a mediator for my spiritual experiences. Mm. I had a flash of insight of how hard I tried for years to find someone who could connect me to spirit, to God, the person that was, you know, switched on enough that they could create the line to the divine. And I just was just like, F that.
Yeah.
There was a huge rumbling in my system of like, what is that all about? And eradication of that idea in my system, in my software, of like, big software update around that. Like, I do not need a mediator. I do not need a teacher to connect myself to spirit and the universe. No more. And so,
wow, I've got goosebumps.
And so I just made a very crystal clear decision that I was not going to go to anybody's thinking they had anything for me that was my direct connection. Yes, wisdom. Yes, teachings. Yes, all of that. But I had been going and seeking through others for a different reason. I knew I was going for me to get, so they could give me that line.
Yeah.
And that illusion was just blown to pieces around that time.
Was it a clear-cut release?
It felt so clear to me.
Yeah. Wow.
And I started to make changes immediately. And I also realized at that time how, you know, few women were talking about these experiences that I knew of. And I talked to tons of people. I'm with people all the time. And I realized these conversations don't come up very often. And also women don't have so many places that they can talk about their body and experiences in this way. So I started holding women's circles as my own way of self-care. So that was another thing that I did in terms of self-care for myself.
Yeah.
I realized I need to be able to really humbly, authentically, honestly be talking about these experiences in this kind of spiritual context and also lifestyle I've been living and with the people that I'm around.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. I'm going to go to a quick multiple choice question. Yeah. Smoothies or juices?
Juices.
Sunset or sunrise?
Sunrise.
Ooh, nice. Pen and paper or notes on a phone or computer?
Pen and paper.
Good. I like that. I'm a pen and paper girl too. And what's a book? Can you share a book with us, Em, that's impacted you or just the first one that comes? I know you are like one of the best, most well-read women that I know. We're always like swapping juicy book details.
Yeah.
But is there anyone you want to share with us today?
Yeah, I think the Anatomy of Arousal by Sherry Winston.
Yeah,
that's probably the one I recommend the most right now.
Awesome. I love it. So you've had this moment, you've created what feels like just hearing and listening to your story, so much space and expansion in you in like breaking down the old routines and habits of having to move your body in a certain way. And also that like relentless seeking and trying to like get that direct connection through outside sources. And so what happens next? Like how does that all start unfolding when you start breaking down? Did you keep coming back to that woman inside the womb, that part of self? Like what was she really wanting from you in terms of self-care, and like how did you find her voice and start to communicate?
I did try to go back to her for a while, but because of the vastness of this field, this new territory that I was suddenly embarking upon, I found that I kept that experience really dear. I knew that was something that needed healing, that part of myself and the collective really needed some sort of medicine. And I think what happened was I just allowed all of the new territory and all of the discoveries and this feeling of being, you know, starting from scratch again to be the medicine. Mm-hmm. I remember having that awareness around it. Like, I didn't feel like I needed to go in and do a particular healing session around that. It was more like, okay, girl, I got you.
Yeah,
like this, we're gonna go on a journey together. That's more of what it felt like.
I love that. And I think that requires such an enormous amount of trust that everything will naturally unfold as it's meant to, you know, without trying to control the situation or the outcomes or the expectations or the judgment. It's really like an open canvas.
And I think at that point, I had enough understanding of working with people and an understanding of the importance of loving presence as the healing agent of all things. Like, I had really had some big downloads around that being the foundation of all things, all modalities, all therapies, all therapists, all if someone has a loving presence, loving awareness with someone else or with themselves, everything starts to unfold and blossom from there. But if that's not there, then it takes a lot longer. So I knew if I held that part of me with loving presence and took it gentle and slow and I didn't try to fix her, it would be okay.
I love that. And you can almost, you know, I'm just thinking as I'm listening to you, like self-care is showing up with loving presence to whatever part needs her, that loving presence, you know. I love that.
And I used to be like, well, what is loving presence? You know, like, how do I be a loving present person?
Yeah.
But I realized that I just had this experience visiting my mom for the first time in a long time, who I have a complicated relationship with. Dropping my agenda is to be loving, completely present, dropping my cell phone, mm-hmm. getting off of it, putting the things away, and finding a way to take a breath in, a breath out, to chill for a moment, and to not have an agenda, anything but what's going on in this moment is the loving presence. So many other things could be said around that, but
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I love that. And knowing this about you and seeing what you've actually done with that experience and how you've kind of created, I would say, framework around helping other women get in touch with what they most need. Tell me how that process, like you said, you started women's circles because you needed them.
Mm-hmm.
But what have you noticed in opening up that space? Like, you've just finished an incredible teacher training here in Bali. It was mm-hmm. all women.
Mm-hmm.
What do you learn from seeing women drop into that deeper layer of self-care? Like, what are some observations that you've noticed within them and even within yourself? How does it play out?
Well, one of the biggest takeaways I have from working with circles and groups of women in particular is when I listen to them, I start to understand more and more this blue, you know, there is like a universal blueprint
mm-hmm.
of what we all struggle with as women. And so just, you know, verifying that again and again and again for myself, hearing the ways women struggle with feeling loved, struggle with feeling like they belong somewhere, struggling with safety. And hearing this again and again and again, I was like, well, self-care has to start with those things then.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel like we belong to ourselves? How do we feel like we have a foundation of love? And how do we create safe, pleasurable environments around ourselves and in our relationships? And that's actually those are like the principles of a self-care program, is addressing those things that I found as common denominators of what women struggle with the most.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I love how you approach it with, you're not broken. There's nothing that you need to fix.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really awareness and almost acceptance of what is
mm-hmm.
already. And I love that, because I remember once I went to one of your circles at the yoga barn when you were doing them there. It was a couple of years ago now. And we all walked in and there was this big group of women, and there's probably like 30, 35 women there all over the world. Like, I don't think that there was more, that there would have been 20 countries represented,
mm-hmm.
all different ages, all different body shapes, just so many differences when you look around. And then when we started talking, it was pretty much one thing that was the same common thread that every woman had shared. And I remember the topic was self-pleasure.
Mm.
And I was like sitting there observing these women thinking, wow, she is going through exactly the same thing that I'm going through. And I left that circle, and it was just sharing and moving around and holding space and being witnessed by each other. It wasn't like, okay, now we go home and do X, Y, Z. It wasn't like that. It was just this beautiful place of deep surrender and trust and sharing and listening and holding each other. And I remember going home and thinking, that is self-care, just that experience and expression of what was shared there. It's not the pedicures, the facials,
right.
the like, you know, getting drunk on wine and like going out for it. Like, those things are fun and they're great. But that part, that woman in all of us that sits in our womb, like, she needs so much more than what
she needs to be seen.
She needs to be seen.
Heard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Witnessed in her open vulnerability, I would say, just as she is, and not told you're not good enough, you're not skinny enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not rich enough, you're not this enough. It's just letting her be seen.
And letting her know that it's okay to feel all of those things.
Exactly.
And there's no need to fix all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And just by having that attitude, all of that stuff starts to shift. The stuckness around it starts to shift. especially amongst a group of women that get together for that purpose.
Yeah.
It is so the medicine that's needed for women. Most women don't even recognize the power of that intimacy between women.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. Because we still wear all our masks, you know? And I find this, particularly as I've stepped into motherhood, it's like, how are you going? Yeah, I'm great. The kids are doing this and the kids are doing that and blah, blah, blah. But how are you going? Like, what's going on for you? How are you showing up? And because motherhood is like fucking crazy sometimes, you know? And just being able to share honestly what is happening to me in every moment without being judged, without feeling like I've done something wrong, without being shamed or without any guilt being triggered. It's just, it's the thing that you need. And then you can take that and then go back into being a mama and be so much more stronger and capable, more so than, you know, if I hadn't shared with someone that I feel really close to and had that experience. So I'm really curious, if someone is really new to self-care and this conversation has maybe opened up in something within them that I need to do more than, you know, go and get a pedi or have a massage, or what advice would you give them, being a woman and gone down this road and seeing the hundreds of women that you've seen in go into this process? What advice would you give to someone that's kind of at the start of their journey? So it's like, yeah, I honor that I need to take care of myself better, but I don't know how or what that looks like. What would you say to that woman?
For women, and especially for women that are feeling that way, I find that they're getting cultural and familial messages that are saying women's work is meh, don't look there, don't look at the feminine, it's this, that, and the other, and messages of like downplaying or disregarding the importance of the feminine.
Yes.
And anything for women's health. I was like that before. I was like, don't give me that stuff. I was not interested. And I mean, that goes to show how important it was. You know, the thing we turn away from the most is usually the thing we need the most.
Yeah.
And so I would have a chat with that woman about that. What are the messages you're receiving from your family and your culture around the feminine? Does that word trigger you? Does the word woman trigger you? Do you have triggers around the word breast or vagina or uterus? And I would propose some questions like that. I'd give her reading material, like the book I mentioned, The Anatomy of Arousal by Sherry Winston. Maybe Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski is another great book. And I would recommend that she goes down a path of educating herself on her body and noticing any emotions like feelings like disgust or agitation or anger coming up.
Guilt.
And what she's also attracted to in this literature, and I think it has to start there. She has to want it.
Yeah.
And she probably needs to go on a few weeks, months of self-education through reading, watching videos, understanding that, whoa, I've been holding a lot of negative self-talk about this whole operating system. And where did I get that from?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think you know, one of the things that's been so powerful in my journey has been connecting with other women, you know, like you and I, we just, we don't get to see each other so much because we're both traveling, we've both got hectic schedules, but as soon as we meet in person, it's just like, boom, deep down around the house.
We've gone down some good rabbit holes.
Some good ones. But for me, it's that, also finding those other women who are willing to have conversations like this.
Yeah, that's a good point, Kate. So if a woman was living in a city that I didn't know anything about, I would recommend she goes and finds a women's circle to participate in, because that alone will, I mean, it's it's so a mystery what unravels in a women's circle. And from those conversations and those abilities to share, it's kind of like universe starts pointing women in the right direction and to the right relationship. So I'd say, yeah, go find, go join a women's group, or go join something like that where you can be in some honest collaboration of sorts.
Exactly.
With other women.
Yeah. Especially when you first start really going through this process of expanding and opening and breaking down, I found it was so good. And that's why women's circles are so potent, because sometimes you can't go to your friends, or you just don't feel safe to let yourself be seen in a certain way by people that already have an opinion of you. So when you rock up, like that day that I walked into your circle, no one knew me. I wasn't like the teacher or the mother or the this or that. I was just a woman talking about self-pleasure and my experience with it. And that in itself was so liberating, because there's no pretense, there's no masks, there's no, falseness that you have to carry or have to wear. It's just showing up and being with that present moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it's our responsibility to cultivate these moments for ourselves, because they don't just happen naturally when you're at that very beginning stage.
Yeah. And I find that these conversations and really getting down to what self-care is, that conversation can feel so taboo in one's normal circles of family and friends and colleagues. So yeah, finding a place where you are a little more anonymous and
they should have a self-care anonymous.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Meeting. That'd be awesome. We should start this.
That's the next idea, right? That's the next thing we're working on. Add that to the list.
I know. So in Em, I'm curious as like what your self-care looks like these days.
Mm-hmm.
You're such an incredible, epic teacher. You're traveling all over the world. You are, you're writing, you're mentoring, you're doing so many things. So what is more on maybe a practical and tangible level? What does self-care look like for Em these days?
Well, for me, it's been letting myself sleep in when I can sleep in. Mm-hmm. Whereas I used to make myself get up really early and do meditation, yoga, this and that. And just allowing myself to sleep in when it's possible with my schedule and not worry about practice is a big deal for me. Like, that's very liberating and a very healthy thing for me to do at this chapter in my life. I also have a newfound respect and intimacy with my breath.
Mm.
So I grew up in the yoga tradition learning particular breath techniques that were great for a while, but then the more sensitive my body became, the more I wanted to explore the breath, and I realized there's other ways to breathe that are more soothing for my nervous system. And so there's something called connected breath work that I do on the regular. It's a very, it's probably one of the best things I've ever found to really help me feel like me, help me feel like myself, and get unstuck from things that have gotten sticky, whether that's an icky conversation with my partner or, I'm stressed out over this, that, or the other, or I feel like a burst of love, but I can't tap into it. So this connected breath work, laying down, that's become a big part of my self-practice. And it's what I also teach that in my self-care trainings that I lead. Because it works.
Yeah.
And from there, something that is, like, I call non-linear movement or instinctual movement. So allowing my body to just lay on the ground until maybe I feel my fingers start to move. And then, I just follow the lead instead of me fitting myself into the shapes these days.
Yeah.
So breath and movement. And also letting myself throughout the day make more sound, like, getting a little more expressive and loud with whatever it is, has been really helpful self-care for myself, even in these breath and movement practices. And another thing is just having more fun, making sure I'm laughing.
Yes. Yeah.
Making sure I'm remembering to be silly.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that I don't downplay that as not spiritual. I did that for a while. I was really hiding my natural silliness and playfulness for so many different reasons. I mean, I've been really busy, so that's part of it. But to bring her back out and let her be free and less confined by structure and ideas of what is expected of me.
Yeah.
Just to remind myself that that's not mine. That comes from a whole system that's placed on our cultures and our families. And actually, I have a choice in that. I do not have to fit myself into some things or someone else's structure or ideas of how I'm supposed to spend my time and my life.
I love that, and
to me, that feels like this very feline playfulness.
Yeah.
Which I'm still getting used to. It's like, because we walk around so serious sometimes. You know, like Tokyo on the subway and everybody's like, London or whatever. But just to remember that all this practice has been for, the whole point is pleasure. The whole point is clarity. The whole point is a loving presence. So if I'm not allowing myself to experience the results of all the practices, what the fuck is the point of all the practices in the first place? So bringing the play out.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
And you know when you just have had a really good laugh and your cheeks are sore and like your eyes are wet and you're just like, that feeling is pleasure running through the body.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever brings you to that point of like complete, like I know when I'm really stressed, I'm like, right, hey, you got to be an absolute goofball right now and just do something really stupid. And it's easy having a little almost 3-year-old there as like constant stimulus and reminder for that. But for me, that's definitely the most important one, because like you said, we're doing all of this work. What's the point? If we're not laughing and joking and also finding the humor in some of those stuck spots, like you said before, it's really helpful.
Because one other thing I've got to drop into the matrix is what you were referring to from the circle. I mean, self-pleasure is a really big piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. And for me and my journey, that's been a big undertaking, is my sexual energy and my sexuality and my hang-ups around it. And really unpacking that story is such a worthy pursuit for any human, man, woman, whatever. That is such an important part of how we feel about ourselves and how we relate to others. So, how I spend time with my body and self-pleasure and going down that is another huge part of self-care.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I totally agree.
Not that there's always time. It's like, I get it. We're busy people, but finding an interest and a curiosity in it is going to start to draw everybody in and reprioritize.
And just even creating intimate moments for yourself is just so, they're game changers for me. Mm-hmm. Like 5 minutes of just solo intimacy, whatever I'm doing, I like literally will come out as 5 minutes of my life and I feel so different.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. One of the quickest and most effective things a woman can do is a traditional breast massage. It's very easy. 28 circles in one direction, 28 in the other direction with an oil. It can take 3 minutes. And y'all can read about that online and find some material about it, or in Sherry Winston's book, but it's just a few minutes to connect with the sensuality, skin, massage, the breast, the heart, the lungs. Can have significant health benefits and a boost to the feminine psyche. So
that's a good one.
Sorry about self-pleasure. That's my favorite one, especially when I'm like traveling or on the go.
Yeah. So 28 circles in one direction and then 28 in the other direction.
Awesome. So one direction clears the breast tissue and negative energy, and the other one creates an alive, buzzy sensation and builds just basically is filling more energy into the breast. One's clearing, one's adding, and you can feel the difference between the two directions.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Em. That was awesome. Thank you for sharing your beautiful self.
My pleasure.
And where can we find out more about you and what you're up to and all the stuff you've got going on?
So my website is highvibeyoga.com, and my name is Emily Kuser, last name Kuser. So I've got all the media, all the got the Instagram and the Facebook and all of that jazz. So.
Awesome. And we'll put all that in the show notes. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Date with Kate. It was awesome to have you join us. If you want to find out more about what I've got going on, plus get the show notes from today's episode, then head over to my website, www.katereardon.com.au, and have a beautiful day.